वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचाणूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दोग्धा गोपालनन्दनः पार्थो वत्स सुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत् मूकं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयति गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम्. वी आर् डिस्कसिङ्ग् दि फोर्थ् चाप्टर् आफ् दि भगवद्गीता. The essential topics that have been beautifully outlined in this chapter by Bhagavan Krishna are these. First, truth is one for all times. Then Bhagavan Krishna goes on praising the knowledge, not only about myself as an incarnation, but the same knowledge also applies to you, meaning that I and you are exactly one and the same. Then the Lord brings out a very important concept which every Hindu believes. Wherever, whenever virtue goes down and adharma, vice, goes up, there the Lord incarnates at that particular age and brings to the fore that teaching which has been covered up by the passage of time. So that is one of the purposes. If anyone can recognize the avatar, that he is none other than God, his birth, his activities are all very mysterious. Mysterious in the sense, they appear as though God is born, God is under ignorance for some time. Whatever he does appears to be more or less like human, but in fact, in reality, it is not so. It is all divine only. Called it divine mysteries. My birth, my actions in this world, whatever I do, they are divine. Implying that whatever is divine is the most wonderful truths to be imitated, to be followed, to be practiced by everybody. The Lord, in this fourth chapter also, shows us the way. You do not stop actions, but go on performing all actions, but relate every action in one of the ways. Do whatever you want to do, considering yourself as an instrument, not expecting the results, and thereby not that we will not get the result, but we get the highest result. Which is called self-knowledge. And how to develop this way of perceiving the divinity in the body, in the mind, in everything, every action that we do. For that the Lord advises that you convert your whole life into yajna. And this yajna will ultimately make you a wise person, meaning a man of realization, meaning that you will realize God. Every now and then, the divine incarnates in a human form. This is one of the core beliefs of Hinduism. And here in the fourth chapter, the Lord categorically asserts that wherever, whichever part of the world, God is ready to help us when we become helpless. So what does he do? He reminds us what is the truth, tattva, what should be the goal of life, purushartha, and how do we attain those goals of life called tattva, purushartha and hita. The lesson that we have to learn here is, since we are coming from God, our nature also is divine nature. If the cause is divine, then the effect also must be divine. Only thing is, we have forgotten. Therefore, we also are given many chances, choices, so that we will be reborn. Nobody can stop that process until we know who we really are. So we too have many births, we will have many more births until we know who we really are. Very interesting, forecasting about Narendra, future Swami Vivekananda, Sri Ramakrishna says, the moment Naren comes to know, he will refuse to stay here and will give up the body. Same thing he foretold of Swami Brahmananda. We can also imply, when we come to know who we really are, we will not be again be born. We refuse to be born, unless of course it is for serving the Lord in a different way. So there is nobody who is a born sinner. Everyone is a child of the divine. But the goal of life is to know who we really are, and until we realize who we really are, we will be given any number of opportunities. In general, everybody is born ignorantly, endowed with ignorance, and that ignorance causes suffering, and suffering is the greatest stimulator, inspirer, and guide for us to move forward. Though very few people can see the relationship between ignorance and suffering. In fact, suffering is the greatest gift of God. Therefore, Maya acts both as a great stimulus in the form of vidya, ignorance, and also as a response in the form of vidya maya, by providing right teaching from a wise person whom we usually call a guru. These are the important points which we are going to discuss in this fourth chapter. Now, in our last class, what did we discuss? Let us briefly recollect. I mentioned that every time we are born because of our past karma. It is called karma janmi. But when God incarnates, he has no past births at all. Therefore, he is born not as a result of his past karma to experience the results of what he did, but he has a mission in life to accomplish, is called karana janmi. Then I highlighted the four pillars of Hinduism. What are they? The first pillar of Hinduism is called Brahman, and the second pillar is Sakshatkara, or direct realization of our true nature by removing ignorance called Maya. And this Maya can be removed by only through proper sadhana, spiritual practice, as instructed by one's own guru and scriptures. The third pillar of Hinduism is the law of chosen deity, Ishta Devata Siddhanta, which means that anybody can think of God in any form, with any name, with any quality, whichever way he likes. The fourth pillar is the law of karma. The whole world is created actually by us, so that we can exhaust our past karma, and we can also create a new good karma called dharma, which alone will take us nearer to God. Then the next point we discussed, verse 6 of the fourth chapter, Ajopisan Avyayatma Bhutanam Ishwaropisan Prakrutim Swam Adhishthaya Sambhavami Atmamayaya. Though I am in reality unborn and I am of imperishable nature, and though I am the Lord of all beings, meaning the whole world, yet by ruling over my own nature, I take birth by taking hold of my own Maya. So this applies to us also. We are not in reality creatures who can be born, because we are none other than Brahman or the divine. But through Maya, through the help of Maya, we take birth. For what purpose, the question comes? It is, first of all, to enjoy Leela, divine sport. That is the only plausible answer that comes. The Lord is telling, sometimes I play the game as if a person is playing solitaire game, And this person, what does he do? He sometimes seemingly commits some kind of mistakes, all in sport. So what does he do? He seems to be suffering. It is an incredible idea that all our suffering is of our own making. We create our own suffering, and that happens to be a fact whether we understand it or not. But as if we close our own eyes with our own hands and then go on thinking that somebody has closed, we don't have any control over it, we are helpless. When it seems to be, again as a result of this divine sport, the divine Lord takes birth as a human being. This is what is explained in the 7th verse. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutthanam adharmasya tada atmanam shujamyaham. Whenever, wherever there is a decay of righteousness, O Arjuna, and a rise of unrighteousness, there and then I manifest myself. What purpose? For the establishment of dharma. What is dharma? Right way of living. We already discussed it. What does he do? Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskrutam dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. For the protection of the good, for the destruction of the wicked, and for the establishment of righteousness, I am born in every age. The Lord wants to protect good people, encourage them, bless them, inspire them, remove their obstacles, grant them knowledge. That's one purpose. But all people are not good people. That is also his, what we call, leela. So there will be the opposite type of people who are called adharmics, evil people. So the next purpose is for the subduing of the wicked. And here the word used is vinasha. Vinasha means destruction. Nobody can be destroyed. But for the subduing of the wicked, what does that mean? We have to understand that even God cannot make anybody non-existent. What does he do? He destroys, as it were, the impurities so that that person can really know who he is. This is the second purpose. This is very interesting purpose because this directly contradicts the theory which many people believe that man is a born sinner. So Hindus may quote Swami Vivekananda and Upanishads and say, no, 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 we are not born sinners. But for all purposes, we behave as if we are the most horrible sinners in this world. And so, we want to get out of it. Who are the wicked people really? Those who seem to be moving away from God. So, the second purpose is to make evil people turn back and move forward towards God. This is the second purpose. The third purpose is dharma sthapanarthaya, for the establishment of righteousness. So the Lord once again came in this world in the 19th century in the form of Sri Ramakrishna. And we also have mentioned, whenever God incarnates, four things happen. His name becomes a Mahamantra which can save persons and take them to the other shore of the ocean, which is self-knowledge. Second, his form becomes an adorable form like Rama, Shiva, Krishna, etc. so that people can identify himself with him. This is called Saguna Brahma or personal God, and ultimately that would be the doorway through which we reach the ultimate goal, which is called the impersonal or formless aspect of God. The third thing is the life of any incarnation exerts a tremendous influence over a large segment of humanity. For example, Buddha was born more than 2500 years back. Even today, when anybody sincerely studies his teachings, they inspire him to tread in his footsteps and attain nirvana, illumination, just as Buddha had done it. The influence comes from the inspiring life. An incarnation's life gives tremendous inspiration to everybody, not only for the newcomers, but for people who have been treading that path a long time, but in between they enter into the valley of darkness, the night of darkness. At that time, if we go on holding to the life of any great soul, that becomes a beacon light, bringing us out of depression, etc. And his teachings give us the right guidance. And as I mentioned in the past, the truth is the same, but it should be presented to us in such a way, it should be practical to us. That is the third event that happens when God incarnates. Then there is a fourth thing that happens. In his name, an organization comes to preserve, propagate, interpret properly the life and teachings of such an incarnation. Many great souls have been followed by this organization, but in course of time, that organization itself becomes a binding factor, because people are unable to understand their real nature, what is the mystery, what is the secret of the incarnation's life and teachings. They are most likely misinterpret the teachings, becomes one-sided, fanatical, and then again the Divine Lord comes, "No, no, no, you misunderstood my life, misinterpreted my teachings, this is what I said, this is not how you have to understand, to correct our understanding again." That is called dharmasthapana. So, how to live in this world? But this organization is not very important factor actually, but the first three. An incarnation's sacred name, an incarnation's divine form and qualities, and an incarnation's life and teachings. We must focus upon these three. This is the mystery of the divine incarnation. Then in the ninth verse, the Lord is telling something wonderful. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvatah tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti sorjuna. He who does knows in true light my divine birth and action, having abandoned the body, he is not born again, he comes to me, O Arjuna. This beautiful verse tells us the only way for us to get out of this snares of this ignorance called the worldliness is to meditate on the life and qualities of a divine incarnation and to try to imitate him. Most of you are aware, there is a beautiful book. Swami Vivekananda was tremendously inspired by that book. He translated it into Bengali, almost, I think, half of it. It is called The Imitation of Christ. What is imitation of Christ? That you lead a life exactly Christ lived. We are all imitators. Whether it is in the social circle called fashion, or whether in a research section, we always tend to imitate what a great person does it. But instead of imitating some monkeys, it is far better to imitate a divine incarnation, a great saint. So the life and teachings are to be meditated upon, because it is a divine mystery. Divine mystery can never be understood through intellectual pursuits. Only a purified mind, graced by the divine assurance, can alone go deep and understand the divine mysteries. This is what the Lord is telling to all of us through Arjuna, that my life, my birth is a divine mystery, my actions are also a divine mystery, and he who surrenders himself to me obtains the true knowledge of who I am and what my actions are meant for. After giving up this body, after the fall of this body, such a person attains me and he need not be reborn again. Let me expound this verse a little bit. So whenever we think of any object, we become that object. How do we get knowledge? There is a special branch of philosophy known as epistemology. How knowledge arises? What is knowledge? In brief, Hinduism, or what we call Hindu darshanas, the schools of philosophy in India, have formulated a wonderful theory that when we come across an object about which we do not know, if we can focus upon that object, our mind goes and becomes one with that object. And to the extent it becomes one with that object, the knowledge of that object becomes revealed to us. This is how knowledge arises. Now, let us apply this principle. We do not know what is an incarnation of God. But if we can meditate, like as they say, an insect meditates on a Brahmara, and ultimately it becomes a Brahmara. Or a wasp bites a bee, and into intense pain and fear, that insect cannot think anything else excepting the wasp, and ultimately it becomes the wasp. I hope the principle is understood. This applies in every case, whether it is secular knowledge, spiritual knowledge, scientific knowledge, artistic knowledge, any knowledge. The greater our absorption in the object, the more our knowledge manifests. Here also a mystery, as Swami Vivekananda so categorically declares to everybody, all knowledge is within. When we meditate upon, say for example, Krishna, supposing there is an artist, he wants to fashion a Krishna, sculpt a Krishna. Then what does he do? He intensely meditates upon Krishna. And he sees in that stone nothing but Krishna. And then he knows what is non-Krishna. What does he do? He chips away all non-Krishna. And what remains is real Krishna. This is exactly the same process. The more we meditate upon scriptural truths, the more we understand. To meditate upon abstract truths is difficult. That is why it is easier, far easier, to meditate upon the form and the qualities of a divine incarnation. And the deeper our focus, our meditation, our concentration, the more we become identified with him. And then we understand that ultimately when we are able to retain only the form of that great soul, then there is nothing left to feel I am different from him. I become him. So what is the essence? When I become one with the chair, I have the knowledge of chair. When I become one with Rama, I have complete knowledge of Rama. When I become one with any incarnation, by imitating an incarnation, like the imitation of Christ, a person becomes really Christ. Then he understands what is Christ. What does he understand? He understands that I am Brahman, I am divine, I am birthless, I am deathless, I am changeless, I am infinite, I am ever pure. Nitya, Shuddha, Buddha, Mukta, Swarupaha. Eternally, I am pure, I am free, I am the infinite, I am the changeless. That is called liberation. That is called freedom, complete freedom. So, this verse categorically tells us, if anybody with longing, with devotion, with purity, meditates upon my life and my deeds, then he understands not only who I am, he also understands who he is. What is it? You and I and you, these are illusions, delusions. Really speaking, whatever exists is only one. And so long as because of the past janma's karma, if the body still continues, or if the body falls off, it makes absolutely no difference to him. He becomes totally free. When? not after the death of the body. Even as soon as that knowledge dawns, he is free. He doesn't say, I have a body, I am the body. He says, I am Brahman. But we, the ignorant people, looking that he sleeps, he eats, he walks, he breathes, think that he has got a body, he has got a mind. And funnily, sometimes he gets angry also. Sometimes he loves, sometimes he scolds, and sometimes he seems to be depressed even. And we fools think that he is one of us. There is a beautiful saying that small fish called minnows, they will be playing, moving about in the river, small rivers. And on moonlit night, the moon is reflected in their waters. And then this fellow, this moon is one of us. Let us play with him. Like that, we think he is also a human being, subjected to all the limitations of the human birth, but no. But when a person really is capable of focusing, meditating, and again through God's grace, he comes to know, I am Brahman. And with that knowledge, he knows who Brahman is, because he himself is the Brahman, and that is how he attains liberation. But then, to attain to that complete concentration, focus, to that complete Shraddha, inviolable, unchangeable faith, it is not easy. So we have to slowly get rid of the obstructions. What are those things which stand as obstructions in our way of spiritual progress? The Lord is enumerating here. They are mainly three. What are those? Vitaraga bhaya krodhaha manmaya mamupashritaha bhavo jnana tapasa puta madbhava magataha. Freed from attachment, fear and anger, absorbed in me, taking refuge in me, purified by the fire of knowledge, many have attained my being. This is again one of the gem of a verses which can help us. What is it that makes us really bound? The whole essence of bondage is three. What is the first thing? Attachment. What is the attachment? That to feel I am the body is an attachment. So we can be attached to the body. This is the root, the mother of all ignorance, of all bondage. As soon as we are attached to something, any obstruction comes to this attachment, turns into bhaya. For example, a person loves another person, and then this attachment comes, deep attachment. Immediately comes this devil, demon, called fear. Suppose there is a separation between me and this person. Suppose there is a separation between me and my house. Suppose there is a separation between me and my wealth. Suppose there is a separation between me and all that I possess, my language, my religion, my country, everything. That fear always haunts us. So they go together. If I am attached, then there is a fear. If I am not attached, there is no fear. I will illustrate it with a common example. We are deeply attached to our body and mind. Even when other people are dying or suffering, we don't feel we are dying, we don't feel we are suffering. But the straightest anything detriment that comes, we feel very badly about it. As if the whole world is nothing else but my own body and mind. So this is all the root cause is attachment, which is called raga. If there is raga, attachment, there is also, it is invariably and inevitably followed by dvesha, aversion. If I like this, I dislike something else. If anybody says, I don't dislike anything, but I like this thing, he doesn't know what psychology is, he doesn't know what he is talking about. The Lord is outlining. First problem is attachment. Attachment brings in fear. And this fear gives way to anger. Because if really something happens, we become frustrated. This frustration turns into, very soon into, anger. If there is attachment, there will be desire. If the desire is frustrated, it turns into anger. But where there is attachment, there is always fear. What is the fear? I might lose this one, I might not get someone. So it is said, there are two important causes of fear. I may lose what I have, and I may not get what I desire to get. And this all arises because of attachment. How beautifully these psychological facts are being highlighted and presented in front of us by the Divine Lord, freed from attachment. We have to slowly make ourselves free from attachment. Attachment is subtler. It gives rise to a grosser result. What is it? Fear. Fear always gives rise to anger. First control anger, which gives a little bit of control, then that will also give us control over our fear, and when we become a little more fearless, our attachment also will be absolutely fine. You know, it is a common experience. Every parent, before every day, the parent practically has to send the children to school. Every mother's heart beats. I am sending, I am not going along with the children. Anything can happen to my children. Not knowing that even if she goes, there could be the same consequences may happen also. But because of her love, she fears everything. And if the children do not come up according to her expectations, it turns into anger. And that is why many parents also beat mercilessly, because the children seem to be not getting. Here important point is that nobody beats the neighbor's children. They beat their own children. Because of what? Because attachment. There is a beautiful incident when Swamiji was in America and he used to stay in a place. A lady used to come from a long distance and spend nearly 12 to 14 hours in serving him. And Swamiji only scolds her. Reward she gets for serving him from morning till evening is constant scolding. And she could not stand it. And one day she asked, Swamiji, I never seem to be pleased you. Very diplomatically used word. Why do you scold me? That is the direct question. Indirect is, you always seem to be, I never seem to be pleasing you. Then Swamiji put up a very innocent face and said, whom else shall I scold? Shall I scold somebody who is walking outside the street? He conveyed the idea, I love you, I want your good. Whatever scoldings I give makes you a better person. And in brackets I can add, from that day onwards, her sadhana was how to get more scolding from Swami Vivekananda. Anyway, if a great man scolds us, if a great man curses us, or even beats us, that is for our good. And the devotees of Sri Ramakrishna can recollect. Swami Brahmananji many times slapped Swami Nirvanananda, his attendant, who served him for more than 14 years. And sometimes for no reason at all. And it remained a mystery. But in the end, Swami Brahmananji was about to pass away. He called this attendant and said, my child, you served me well. Now I bless you, you will attain self-knowledge. And really he attained because of that blessing. How many of us would not like to compete with that attendant to get more slappings if we can really have faith that is the shortest spiritual sadhana to attain liberation. One should be free from attachment. For that we should be free from fear. And for that we have to control our anger. When anger is controlled, much of the restlessness of the mind can also be controlled. If we can control this anger or frustration, then fear becomes less. When fear also becomes less, attachment becomes less. When attachment becomes less, fear becomes less. When fear becomes less, anger becomes less. When anger becomes less, fear becomes less. When fear becomes less, then attachment. This is how slowly we progress in spiritual life. So, is it true? Is what you are saying Can it be proved? The Lord says, Bahavo Jnana Tapasa Putaha Madhavam Agataha. There are people, not only at that time, even at this time, who are endowed with a strong faith. They take refuge in the Lord, Upashrita, totally dependent upon the Divine Lord. What do? They try to reduce their attachment, thereby fear, thereby anger, and other evil qualities, which are the offspring of these three. Then, how do they do it? Jnana tapasa, by the austerity of knowledge. What is the austerity? Constantly repeating the divine name, studying the scriptures, meditating upon them. In other words, shravana, manana and nididhyasana. From hearing the truth from a real teacher, having intense faith in that teacher, by listening attentively, believing them to be 100% truth, and putting them into one's own practice, and constantly mulling over these truths in their minds until the last bit of doubts are totally removed from that mind. This is called Jnana Tapasya. It is a wonderful truth that there are many things in this world for which there is no remedy, but we don't want to suffer. At the same time, we know that there is no remedy. What is the way out? Accept them. Accept them, not willy-nilly, not with regret. Well, this is inevitable. What is to happen will happen, and what will not come to pass will not come to pass. Maybe I have done something. Maybe the Lord is teaching something. Maybe I deserve something. Maybe I am exhausting my karma phala, whatever it is. By this acceptance of the fact and adding one more factor. What is it? This is good. This will do me a lot of good, may have more suffering. Do you get examples of this attitude? Yes, the Bhagavatam, the mother of Pandavas, Kunti, actively prayed to Bhagavan Krishna, may I have more and more sufferings again and again. Why? Because so long as we are suffering, we are forced to think of you. The moment we are happy, we will forget you. Only a wise person can utter this kind of things. Bahavo, many, many people, the Lord is telling, it is not exceptional. 1%, 5%, 10%. No, anybody can attain. By this statement, the Lord is telling, anybody can attain to the same truth if we follow the same pathway. And what does this jnana tapas, austerity of knowledge, do? Puta, it purifies our mind. It gives strength. It strengthens our willpower. It purifies our determination. Through all these things, ultimately, what would be the result? Do I get anything? Madhavam agataha. They all attain me. This word attaining means a poor person attains to great wealth. But the person and the wealth remain completely separate. Some people add sugar to their milk. After stirring, what appears? Only milk. But what happens to the sugar? As if it has become one with the milk. But in reality, it has not become one. Because if we boil the milk, sugar comes out separately, milk also comes out separately. But if water is poured into water, they become completely one. This is the true Advaitic unity, not appearing to be one, but really to become completely one. This is what the Lord is telling. They attain me means they become me, not they. Before becoming, they are they, I am I. After becoming, there is no I, there is no they. Whatever remains, call it Brahman, call it God, call it Atman, whatever name you call it. But the Lord is showing us, this is the pathway. What is the essence? Get rid of attachment. Rather, develop attachment. Get rid of attachment one means what? Develop intense, more attachment. Not to the body, not to the mind, but to the divine Lord. And then fear the Lord. What is the fearing Lord? The more we fear God, the nearer we will be towards God. The more we fear its opposite. If we love light, we fear darkness. That is the thing. If we are separated from God, because we developed attachment for God, then we become totally fearless. But the slightest separation brings in tremendous amount of fear. And whatever is causing, we become very angry with that. For example, you know, worldly thoughts. We become angry in this case with what? Worldly thoughts. Why are you disturbing me? This is the meaning of it. Freed from attachment, fear and anger, and absorbed in me, taking refuge in me, purified by the fire of knowledge, many, many have attained my being. That means Vedanta tells us everybody sooner or later will attain God, because each soul is potentially divine. Then the Lord is telling that there are so many people, they all are trying to adore me, love me, getting attached to me. Vedanta tells us, all of us are children of the divine. It is our destiny to manifest our divinity. Here a question of choice, option doesn't arise. The only option we can have is whether we want to attain to God right now or later on. Then the Lord is telling, so many people worship me, adore me, but all their motives may not be the same. Different motives are there. What are the motives? Somebody may want some worldly wealth. In fact, most of the people, they only go to the temples or great people only to gain some profit that belongs to this world. But all of them are only worshipping the Divine Lord. And here is a great truth the Lord is telling, which Sri Ramakrishna highlighted. Jato mat, tato path. As many faiths, so many paths. As many beliefs, so many paths. Ye yadha mam prapadyante tam stathaiva bhajamyaham mama vartmani anuvartante manushya partha sarvashah. So the Lord is telling us, whatever way, whatever religion, whatever path of yoga through which they approach me, even so do I reward them in that particular way. If somebody is approaching me through karma yoga, I reward them in that way. My path is tread in all ways by everybody, O Sanna Pritha, Arjuna. What is the Lord telling here? That don't worry, am I following the right path? With complete faith in God, purity in the words of the teacher, you follow whatever path you want sincerely. If correction is needed, the Lord Himself will come and correct. This also contradicts the idea of some people who believe that their paths, means their religions, are superior to other religions. No such thing is there. Even if you take one such religion who are fanatical, there will be hundreds of sects quarreling with each other that my understanding is better than your understanding. Instead of that, the Lord is telling, no need. What you believe, you follow. What the other person believes, let him follow. The only condition is whether they are sincere. If they are sincere, definitely they will reach the same goal. This is the answer to all the conflicts that is going on in this world. I would like to add to this, say, some people say we don't believe in God. Some people say we believe in God. Some people say we don't know whether God exists or not. What the Lord is telling is, you don't worry about all these things. Be sincere. And whatever you believe sincerely, practice it. Of course, righteous way, dharmic way. Even if you are a scientist, even if you are an artist, even if you are a mere householder for following the dharma of the householdership, provided you do your things rightly. The right path has no other option but ultimately to lead to myself. Here is an assurance. Some people may have a doubt, why do not have a teacher? Who is going to teach me? Do not worry. Whatever little knowledge you have, you follow it. If necessary, God will come and teach you some way or the other. It could be through a human being, it could be through a child, it could be through a person who doesn't like you in the way of passing some remarks about you, it could be a passage in a book, it could be a stray word. You hear someone else talking to somebody else, but at the right time, all these becomes tremendous teachers. I would like to corroborate it with one example from the Bhagavatam. There was a great sage. He used to wander all on the face of the earth without fear, without expectation, completely merged in bliss. He was found out by a king, and the king recognized him for what he is. Then he said, "You look like a knower of Brahman. How did you attain this knowledge?" Then the sage replied, this is the famous story of Avadhuta Gita in the Bhagavatam. "O king, no human being had taught me anything. I learned from birds, from natural events, etc. 24 are my gurus." What does this story tell us? If we are ready to receive the truth can come even from the most ordinary incident. The only condition is, am I ready to learn the truth and take it in and put it into practice? The Lord is telling, in whatever way men approach me, even so do I reward them. My path do men tread in every way, O Arjuna. Then the Lord is leading to a beautiful idea. This earth is a most wonderful place. Human beings are most privileged beings. Not gods, not demons, but human beings. Why is it so? The Lord is making it clear. Kaṅkṣanta karmaṇām siddhim yajanta iha devatāha kṣipraṁ hi manuṣe loke siddhir bhavati karmaja. They who long for satisfaction from actions in this world make sacrifices to the gods, because satisfaction is quickly obtained from actions in the world of objects. In simple words, on this earth, whatever a person does, the result comes much quicker than in any other world. This is a beautiful verse again telling, supposing a person wants to focus upon God, and he says, after all, it is a matter of the mind. Why can't I go to a very busy hotel, sit there in the lounge, and go on meditating upon God? Is it possible? Or he says, I will go to a forest. Maybe he is not ready. He is frightened. But if he stays at home, and without any anxiety, without any fear of insecurity, he can sit and meditate much better. That would give a better result, instantaneous result. And by the way, when I say instantaneous result, if you meditate right now, you don't need to wait 100 years to get the result. If you are reading a book with concentration, the result is instantaneous. You understand it's better, and you think over it better way, and you remember it in a better way, and it will come to your aid in at any needed time. So there are some actions, they give instantaneous result. The Lord is praising, this earth is the proper place for spiritual practice. Whether you want happiness in this world called Abhyudaya, or whether you want self-knowledge called Nisresa, this human life on human earth is the best place to do. Many people understand it. They are extremely eager to get the results. So what is kaṅkṣantaha karmaṇām siddhim? Desiring the fruits of their actions. Different people worship different divine beings, not knowing they are all nothing but various aspects of one single God. And then on this earth, they also get the result of their actions kshipram, means very quickly. Therefore, what is the Lord trying to convey the message to us? You are a human being, that's why I am born as a human being on this earth, and you are a most fortunate person. Therefore, if you want to be free from suffering, this is the best place, this is the best opportunity, and to be born as a human being is a great blessing. Many of our devotees can remember, Vivek Chudamani, Shankaracharya says, to be born as a human being is the most wonderful thing. It is obtainable only by the grace of the Divine Lord. And Sri Ramakrishna, the incarnation of God in this age, demonstrated to all of us. We all know what he used to do after sunset. He used to roll on the ground and say, "Oh Mother, one day of this precious human life is gone. I have not yet realized you. When am I going to realize?" In unbearable agony, he used to roll upon the ground. He is demonstrating thereby that if anybody is born as a human being and wastes his time, really he will be the greatest loser on this earth. Therefore, the lesson is that we will have to use our human birth to the best of our ability. And one parting note, Hinduism is not otherworldly religion. It says, try for happiness in this world, try to become wealthy as you can in this world, but with this caveat that you should not be selfish, you should not be stupid, foolish, earn intelligently and enjoy intelligently, serve other human beings intelligently and share your joys with other people also, share your wealth, share your knowledge, share everything. This is the best way. This Hindu religion is a very practical religion. It is both this worldly and also otherworldly. Why is it? Because according to Hinduism or Vedanta, this life is meant only for one purpose. It is a journey from happiness to happiness, from a lower happiness to higher happiness, not from suffering to happiness. The higher we ascend, the more would be our abiding joy. And this human birth, this earth, is the grandest instruments for us to make this progress in spiritual life. And how to progress in spiritual life further, the Lord will discuss, which we will discuss in our next class. Om Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum. May Sri Ramakrishna bless us all.